You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is May 14th, I believe. I can't believe I forgot to write it down. Today is May 14th, folks. Welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org. That's particularly helpful for folks who are outside our listening area. The markets were mixed today, the Dow closing down at 16,613, the NASDAQ at 4,100, and the S&P at 1,888. Last week, I talked about retirement planning for every stage of your financial life, and this week, we're talking about estate planning for every stage of your financial life. And whenever we seem to do shows on retirement planning or estate planning, we usually get a lot of interest, a lot of calls. So I want to make sure that you get the phone number written down right away. In case you have questions, you're welcome to call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics, not specific investments or specific advice. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic as well. Questions can be discussed live on air with us, with me and my guest this evening, or you may submit your questions off air to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and she will bring it into the studio. Questions may also be emailed through yourfinancialchoices.com. The phone number again, 610-758-8810. Tonight, I have in the studio with me a friend and attorney, Judith Harris, from the law firm of Norris, McLaughlin, and Marcus, where she is chair of Estate, Trust, and Tax Practice Group in Pennsylvania. She has over 27 years' experience in the areas of taxation, wills, and trust, and estate administration. Her specialties include business matters involving corporations, partnerships, and limited liability companies. Her practice also includes charitable trusts and foundations and representation of estates, trust, and beneficiaries in disputes before the Orphans Court. She routinely handles the resolution of tax controversies for business and individual taxpayers before all divisions of the Internal Revenue Service and the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue. These cases often involve estate, business, and individual audits or the resolution of collection efforts such as liens, levies, and garnishments by the IRS and state taxing authorities. And Judy also has, I believe, her LLM in taxation, and that's what marries these two practices so well for her, being able to represent folks and understand all the complexities of taxes that go along with estate planning. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Lori, thank you so much. What a pleasure to see you again and to be here. Thank you very much. It's really a delight for me.
So if for anyone who hasn't listened to the show in the past, Judy has been on several times. She's a go-to person when we talk about estate planning and always does a great job for us. And I'm really excited about doing the show tonight on planning for every stage. Judy, can you just give us a little snippet maybe about I gave all your credentials and all of that. Can you tell us just a little bit maybe about your practice, why you like it, your passion around it, just for folks to kind of get an intro to you?
Oh, thanks, Lori. And I'll keep this really brief. Let's see. I'm a local product, born and raised in Allentown. I'm a partner in the law firm of Norris, McLaughlin, and Marcus, as you said. It's a full-service law firm with offices in Allentown, Bridgewater, New Jersey, and Manhattan. And we do all kinds. We practice in very many areas of the law, from litigation, corporate work, securities, intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights, patents, matrimonial law, also known as domestic relations, divorce, what have you. We're a business law firm, and we have a large footprint, and I'm very involved in planning people's estates, wills, trusts, powers of attorney. As we age, you know, I've, at this point with 27 years behind me, I've because of you, I had occasion today to think about the different stages in my clients' lives, and I've seen them flourish and their families mature, and it's a pleasure, and it's a pleasure to be able to help them solve their problems and promote growth along the way.
That's fun, yeah, because I do imagine in 27 years there were probably times where you were talking to them about before they had children, then when they had children, minor provisions in documents to maybe now those same children could be their executors. So hopefully we'll touch on some of this as we go through those stages of your financial life. I want to set the stage, and I have to apologize to Judy because this is going to take me probably a few minutes, and I want to give her the microphone to be able to talk and answer questions for our listeners as well. But what I've been trying to do in a couple past shows and tonight as well is try to talk about these stages and how planning is so important for every stage of your life. And for our listeners, for people who may have children that this might apply to, parents that it might apply to, siblings that it might apply to, really, it's about making good decisions at whatever stage you are in your life, and good decisions for retirement planning, like I talked about last week, estate planning as well, cash flow, all kinds of financial decisions by us investing a little time in learning can make better decisions all the time. So I want to set the stage. Last week, I did talk about the elements of financial planning. You can listen to those prior podcasts if you want. Elements of financial planning, cash flow, investments, risk management, which is basically insurance, tax planning, retirement planning, and estate planning. From the elements of financial planning, we recognize that they may apply at any stage of your financial life. And the stages, as I've described them on prior shows, and for this, just to help us get our arms around what stage we're talking about, I call them this: testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. And as Judy and I have our conversation, I'll kind of give a brief synopsis of each of those stages as we come to it. So let's talk about now estate planning for every stage. So Judy, estate planning at the testing stage, what I'm going to call the testing stage, that's our younger folks. Maybe they're just new to the workforce. Their salaries are low. They might not think they have anything. They might have a new job. They get into that new job. It might offer a retirement plan. It might offer life insurance. What kind of estate planning needs would a young adult have? Even though they might think they have nothing, what do you see happening at that stage in their life that they should probably pay attention to?
Well, I'm pleased to say I can still remember that point in my life. It was a few years ago. But, you know, we all remember that point in our lives. And estate planning is a process. It's a continuum as our lives change. Unfortunately, we're all mortal. And we know that at some point we won't be here. So the very ground level of estate planning is making sure that you have a document, a will, that gives your legal wishes for what you want done with what you do own, and appoints somebody, an executor, to oversee that process, usually with the expertise of a lawyer, to make that process as streamlined and clear as possible. If you ever acquaint yourself with what the laws in various states like Pennsylvania say, if you die without a will and how your assets are distributed and who is the preferred person to serve as executor, it isn't always what the statute provides, is not always what individuals wish. So it's really good to have a will even that early. And I know it's a little rare for for young people to have that. We're also, as human beings, prone to, hiccups in our health and what have you. I have clients who travel, young people who travel in business. So a power of attorney is a good idea in the event they would be unable to handle their financial or legal decision making, maybe for a short period of time when they're outside the country, or, you know, have an unfortunate injury that renders them hopefully only temporarily unable to handle their own personal, financial, and medical matters. But it's, you know, being at that young age and being in your first job, perhaps, and having these wonderful benefits accorded to you through your employment, it's a wonderful opportunity to set the stage educationally so we can educate ourselves, know how we should be thinking going forward, getting to know how life insurance works, retirement plans. It's just a wonderful period in one's life to become knowledgeable, to lay some groundwork. So I view estate planning as housekeeping, and you and I have talked about this many times. We all like to have our house in order, I know we all feel better when we have our estate planning and financial houses in order as well.
What I'd like to say is, if you plan, then nothing will happen. If you don't plan is when you really have to worry. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on estate planning for every stage of your life. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Judy Harris, who is with the firm of Norris McLaughlin and Marcus, a local firm but with offices in Manhattan and New Jersey as well, and a varied background, so lots of go-to help there for any aspect of estate planning that may apply. Sometimes people think estate planning is simply, you know, going and getting your documents done, but sometimes it's a little bit more than that. It's looking at asset titling. It's looking at what kind of assets you have. It's looking at the stage where you are in your life, and that's one of the things we're talking about tonight, doing estate planning for every stage. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live on air or off air. Just give your question to Judy Ann, and she will bring it in the studio if you don't want to talk live on air. We were just talking about young adults and what estate planning might apply, and Judy had mentioned it's a great time to start some good habits, get into that educational process. I've been kind of weaving a little theme into all the shows where I'm talking about the power of compounding. So many people think compounding is just about money and returns. Compounding is also knowledge. So if you start with that good framework, that base, then, you know, it's a springboard to better decisions for yourself going forward. Judy, for example, what I was wondering is, how many people, and maybe we should promote this, older generations taking the opportunity to kind of bring their younger generation in, typically, let's say, their adult children, their young adult children. Because one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, beneficiary designations, powers of attorney, that type of thing. If someone goes into a new job and they sign up, you know, beneficiary designations, they're not married, they don't have children. Quite often, what do we see kids naming? Who do we see kids naming as beneficiaries on their retirement accounts and their insurance?
Well, often their parents.
Often their parents. Okay, so there may be cases where that might not be the best decision. So if you've worked so hard with the parents on their estate planning and they're not communicating this to their adult children who may be in fantastic jobs. I mean, some kids coming out of college start with jobs making $70,000, $80,000 a year with benefits. So that could be an opportunity to have a conversation about beneficiary designations.
It's a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, by naming your parents, who might be very well off themselves, you might be creating a tax problem that could be averted with some discussion and careful planning. And thank you for mentioning beneficiary designations. Estate planning is by no means only about the will, the power of attorney, and the living will. And I know we both like to have clients fill out a brief questionnaire with information we need to make this process really simple in most cases. That's a good time to really understand and nail down the beneficiary designations, the primary beneficiary, and then one or more contingents if your primary beneficiary doesn't survive you, mm-hmm. which can happen with, you know, people of an older generation.
Right. So Judy just made a really good point there. It's not just about getting a will or power of attorney in order. It's also about the beneficiary designations. And on the flip side of that, it's not just about beneficiary designations. You know, I sometimes hear, you know, financial advisors talking to clients saying, oh, we can avoid probate. We can avoid this. Let's set up the beneficiary designations or the asset titling in such a way to make everything non-probate. But we also know that if you're not doing proper estate planning documents, you may not catch everything. And that's not always the best way to do it anyway. Power of attorney, advance health directives, all of that is part of that estate planning discussion you have with the attorney. There are a lot of boxes to tick off of things that you need to do to have yourself covered. And that's part of the education process as well. It's not about listening to what you hear on television or on the radio or what your neighbor says. There's a lot more involved in putting it all together. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about estate planning at every stage of your life, and we're just kind of giving some highlights and some tips about these various stages. The next stage we would move into would be nesting. It's a time when you're tempted to defer savings for retirement, or you're taking care of new responsibilities. You have homes, you have children, you have education. So all of a sudden, we're thinking it's all about financial. But Judy, can you talk for a moment, what else is involved in estate planning? It's not always just about looking at assets or how you have your beneficiary designations. Estate planning is planning for your estate, not just when you die, but making sure you're okay, your family's okay. So can we talk a little bit about what other types of conversations do you have with clients when we're looking at things like they now own homes, they have jobs, they have loved ones who might be relying on them?
Absolutely. And, you know, these in our examples, these people have, we have homes, as you said. We want to make sure the home is properly insured against fire, flood, theft, you know, a slip and fall on the property. That's we lawyers often refer to all of that as asset protection planning. Different states have laws that might be a little different, and we can lend some good ideas in our discussion about how best to own your home or various assets, given your occupation and your other assets, and making sure, since estate planning is a team effort, you know, you should have a good financial planner, you should have an insurance agent, you should think about a CPA. We want to protect what you have. We want to make sure you have a plan B if you should, as a parent, I say you, if, you know, a parent becomes disabled. I remember as an example, my dad had a family business. And after he secured some very substantial financing in the 80s with high interest rates, I think they were about 15%, he had a sore throat that, you know, wasn't going away. And he was a smoker. Not only did the realization that if something happened to him, his family would be faced with a lot of debt and not adequate planning, it caused him to do really two really important things. He quit smoking cold turkey. I was very proud of him. And I was also proud of him because he actually engaged in a very thorough and complete estate planning program that included buying life insurance that could cover the debt if, God forbid, something had happened to him. He had adequate liability insurance. He didn't have a retirement plan. He had a business. Mm-hmm. And he and my mother had good wills drawn up, powers of attorney in the event either of them had become disabled. And they had medical decision-making powers if they couldn't make their own medical decisions. This was before Section 529 mm-hmm. plans, but now part of the process is making sure if you do have the luxury of setting aside some funds for tuition for your children that when they go to college, that's another kind of planning in the nesting stage.
So this is great. It's putting all of these pieces together. And I think that Judy also mentioned something really important. Quite often, I don't know if people recognize, does their occupation put them at risk? So an attorney can assess that and then, again, talk about possibly ways to hold assets, asset titling, what kind of insurance coverage you need. So all very good things. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Thank you, Jeff, and welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in the studio this evening attorney Judy Harris from the law firm of Norris McLaughlin and Marcus. Judy, I always want to say Neiman Marcus. Anybody who shops knows what I'm talking about.
Some of our clients call us that too, and we think that's kind of neat.
So it is Norris McLaughlin and Marcus. So we are here. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about estate planning. It's frankly my favorite subject to talk about. Estate planning and taxes, and I'm lucky that I have Judy here because she enjoys talking about it as well. And it's something that I think we need to make a little bit more open to people. It seems that I think it's more than like half the people in our country don't have proper estate planning or proper estate planning documents and things like that. So we need to bring this conversation to our communities. Folks, estate planning, it's not always just about the will. It's also about making sure that you have your, you know, health wishes spelled out. You don't want someone else maybe making those decisions for you. Powers of attorney. Again, doing your planning, to me, kind of gives you an edge because then nothing will happen. Again, it's those folks I always feel who don't do it that end up getting caught. So that's a little incentive. If all of you are afraid to think about dying, well, you know, plan for it and then nothing will happen. You'll be good to go. So we're talking about estate planning for every stage. We talked a little bit about testing, nesting. The nesting stage is such a big stage, Judy. And one of the things I would like to kind of go over just a bit is the start of that nesting stage, possibly when people might be having children, and also writing documents that provide some flexibility, but recognizing that folks have to realize that you can't write flexibility forever in documents and the importance of updates. So we touched on this a little bit at the beginning of the show, talking about how those stages, how we can go through a stage with little kids into adults. If you could touch on that.
Absolutely.
Kind of take us through that a little bit.
The general rule, and there are no black and white rules, but the general rule I give clients, every 5 years as a start, you should think about whether the estate plan you have in place is still valid. Our lives change. I say, you know, with the birth or adoption of a child, a death in the family, contemplation of marriage, and I love, especially in this day and age, where some people are getting married later and some people are, you know, after having lost a spouse or having been divorced, will remarry. And I do an awful lot of prenuptial agreements to protect all members of the family who need to be protected, to make sure that when there is a second spouse and children from a first marriage, that the client has all events covered and the client's objectives can be carried out as to who should inherit what in the event of a death or a divorce. And a prenuptial agreement is an important companion in many circumstances, a companion to the will and the estate plan. So that's another event, a contemplation of marriage, grandchildren, a change in the family dynamic. You know, not everybody gets along in all families, and there are ways to provide for those situations and carry out the client's objectives. So I would say any kind of life-changing event, or if there don't seem to be any, I'll take another look every 5 years. A very important event that can cause us to do this is a change in the laws. Mm-hmm. And you remember 2012 and all of the fiscal cliff planning we engaged in. It was a very, very busy time when we thought we would lose a very big tax planning opportunity. And it caused a lot of people to come to us to have us take a look, you know, a look at documents that perhaps hadn't been looked at in 15 or 20 years. So it was a very good, that change in law brought a lot of people back into the fold to update their documents. I felt very, very good about that.
And sometimes people's interpretation of the law also needs to be checked, because I think, you know, we have listeners from New Jersey as well, and sometimes I think they think, oh, the federal exemption was extended, and they forget that New Jersey has not only an inheritance tax but an estate tax, and folks, the rules might not have changed for you. So, you know, you got to make sure how you understand the laws as well. Judy, we had a couple questions come in off air. So we had Marge from Quakertown call in, and she asked, I own a home alone and own it outright. Am I leaving myself too open? Should I name one of my kids as part owner in case something happens? So Marge says she owns her home alone, owns it outright, and leaving herself too open. I'm assuming that might be taxes. I'll let you address that. But should I name one of my kids as part owner in case something happens? And you probably get this kind of question all the time.
Yes, and so. I'm sure you do, too, in what you do, Laurie. And it's a very important question, so I thank you, Marge, for having asked it. The simple answer to the question is, you're wise to think about this. It's difficult for me to answer this question in a vacuum. There are many questions I have to ask you, and most of those questions have to do with understanding what your other assets are, in addition to the home, who the members of your family are, what your wishes are, as we say in my biz, who the natural objects of your bounty are, to whom do you want to leave your assets when you leave this earth? So there are a few other questions I would want for you to answer in order to help you answer. The question you've asked is very, very easy for me to answer once I have more information.
Very good. And we had another question come in. I don't know if we'll have time because it's a little bit related. Christy from Bethlehem had called and she said, can you explain more about asset titling? And Judy, we might wait till after the break, but I think it will dovetail into this because she also says, does that apply only to things like homes? And how is it different from a beneficiary designation? So maybe we will take this when we come back from the break. What's the difference between when we talk about asset titling versus beneficiary designations, and maybe how does a home come into play with all of that? So, Christy, hopefully you can hang on and wait for our answer just after this next break. Jeff, can we? Yeah. So, folks, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We appreciate the calls. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Judy Harris from Norris McLaughlin and Marcus, and we are discussing estate planning at every stage of your financial life. So we have talking about the testing stage, those early years when folks are just getting new jobs, who are they naming as beneficiary designations, do they have powers of attorney, do they have healthcare directives, a will, all those good estate planning documents. Are they having conversations with their parents before they go fill out this paperwork? Maybe their parents aren't the right people to be the beneficiary. What kind of conversation is that? And maybe parents, you can invite your adult children to maybe see your attorney as well. We then moved on to the nesting stage, and we were talking a little bit about asset titling and protecting those assets and different ways to do that. Christy from Bethlehem had called in, and she asked, can you explain more about asset titling? Does that only apply to things like homes, and how is it different from a beneficiary designation? So, Judy, if you want to start the answer, and then I can chime in.
Thank you, Laurie. And I'm going to Christy, I'm going to give you a very short answer here because Laurie and I could talk for about an hour giving you the beautiful details of this issue. How we own our assets, whether they're individually owned, jointly owned with right of survivorship, as tenants in common, through corporation or partnership, or in some other fashion, will to a certain extent determine how the asset will pass to other people at your, or institutions if you have charitable wishes, at your death. So titling, how you own an asset, can affect how the asset passes to someone or something at your death, with or without a will. How you own an asset can also dictate to what extent the asset will be taxed by the inheritance tax division in this state, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, or in another state in which you either own real estate or in a state in which you are domiciled, you know, where you have your principal residence. So ownership can dictate tax consequences, both death tax consequences, income tax consequences, and can also dictate where the asset actually passes at your death. So homes or residences are only one example of assets we're concerned about when we ask how you own your assets. When I give you that wonderful questionnaire and ask you to list your assets, I ask about bank accounts and how they're owned, investments, stocks and bonds. If with a retirement plan, you, the participant, are really the owner in every case, but then it's a question of who the named beneficiary is. And the comment I'd make, Christy, is that there are certain particular kinds of assets that that will not routinely pass through your will because you have an opportunity outside the will through paperwork, kind of like a contract, to name beneficiaries. Retirement plans, whether they be a 401k, a 403b plan, or an IRA, those are all examples of assets that will pass at your death to the people, person, or persons you've named as beneficiaries. You can also name a charitable institution in many cases as well. Life insurance is another asset that gives you an opportunity to name a beneficiary. It could be one or more persons, it could be an institution, it could even be your estate or a trust that you or somebody else creates. We like to look at each of your assets and identify how it acts so we can make sure we carry out your wishes at your death.
That was a great answer, and I don't know if I have anything to add to that. You're so eloquent, Judy. I love listening to how an attorney's brain thinks, because my brain goes all over the place, a million different directions, and that was very clear. I appreciate that. Christy, I hope that answered your question. Dovetailing on that, there was I wanted to kind of take our nesting stage a little bit further, because I have, when we're talking about beneficiary designations and accounts, and we were talking about, you know, whether people are in relationships or not, I have a brother who said, you know, yeah, I want to name all the nieces and nephews. I said, well, I'm not sure that's, you know, quite the right thing to do. And I'm not sure what he ended up doing exactly. But if folks are naming beneficiaries without seeking counsel, they may not understand the consequences of those beneficiary designations. Can you just mention to people the little hiccups they can run into if they're naming minors' children without setting up with their attorneys, or, you know, the proper kind of catch-all?
Absolutely, Laurie.
Okay.
Excellent concern. You know, the reality of the situation is, I met with somebody today who had, you know, close to $500,000 in a retirement plan, and said, well, my husband is my primary beneficiary, and I'd like my children, my three children, to be the contingent beneficiaries if my husband does not survive me. And I said, oh, and the questionnaire you filled out tells me that your children are ages 10, 13, and 15. How do you feel about, God forbid, now, you know, you and I both know that we can't control the world in which we live in every way, and God forbid something would happen to the client and also to the client's husband, would she really want, a third of that $500,000 to pass really kind of unfettered to the minor children without the benefit or protection of a trust or a trustee to manage and distribute judiciously those funds until the children become older? So that's an issue we run into with minor children. We also know people who have special needs, who might be adults. They might be adults but have limitations in their ability to manage the funds that they will inherit. I also have clients who have concerns about people they want to name beneficiaries who have creditors. They might be a beneficiary, a child might be in a bankruptcy, and we don't want those assets to be seized by creditors. So this is a point where we often raise the issue of trusts, whether it's worthwhile to explore creating a trust to be the beneficiary or own the asset.
Okay, so that was great, and I think that this should kind of raise the antenna for people who are listening, that when you're thinking about naming folks beneficiaries on whatever assets you might have, you really need to think through who they are, where they are, and what their circumstances might be. And that might garner a further conversation with your attorney and possibly further conversations with those people whom you want to benefit, those beneficiaries. Again, they may not need it. It may mess up their estate planning. Those might be things that you want to think about. And in cases where maybe you don't want those people to know, maybe you want to name them as beneficiary, but you really want to keep that private, you can work with your attorney to kind of set up even another kind of safety net, maybe like contingent beneficiaries to that beneficiary, that if in the end they don't want the asset, it's going to mess up their planning, they could disclaim it and say they don't want it. But you've got to work through all those different kinds of scenarios with your attorney, and they'll walk you through those. So what we're talking about is protecting assets, making sure they're going to the place where you want them to go. And now let's move to that next stage. We have assets. Maybe they're growing. We're going to talk about investing. So at the investing stage, you realize, again, that you have money in assets. This is the time, if you haven't done it already, to go see your attorney, do your estate planning, because they may have some ideas, again, and we touched on this at the beginning of the show, maybe how to title those assets, but also maybe what kinds of assets might you have, or set up to further your estate planning even a little bit better. And Judy, kind of where I'm leading on this as an example, again, we're just trying to give some high level examples for people to start these conversations, that you can have these conversations with your family members, with your attorneys, with your advisors. Let me throw out, you mentioned 529. So if we're looking at the investing stage, you have a client who comes in, maybe they even have their documents, they're in for their update, they say, wow, Judy, my assets are really accumulating here, I happen to have enough to live on, do you have any ideas, how can I further protect them or save inheritance tax?
Okay. You know that there are opportunities to make gifts, you know, when being that we have here in Pennsylvania, an inheritance tax when we die on assets passing to other than our spouse or charities. And the rates, by the way, range from 0% for a spouse, no tax there, assets going to a spouse, 4.5% to lineal descendants, children, grandchildren, or in the other direction, parents, grandparents, 12% for brothers and sisters, 15% for anybody else other than charities, next door neighbors, best friends, third cousins once removed, and 0% for a qualified charity. So when you see what the tax bite is, and that's just PA, we have a federal estate tax that can kick in at about 40% and go higher than that. We each have a $5.34 million exemption from the federal estate tax. But if you're really wealthy, you know, you want to make sure that you don't die with too many assets if you don't need them. So, you know, this is a stage where we might talk with clients who have more than they ever expect to use. And most of my clients live pretty frugally, or, you know, earned it themselves, our success stories, and they're ready to make gifts, and there's a way to do it, and there's a way to do it without incurring federal gift tax. And it's probably a little bit beyond the scope, all the details of this program, but there's a lot we can do to plan gifts and giving tuition, gifts of tuition, as you said, through a Section 529 plan. What a wonderful vehicle that can save in income taxes and still give a lot of flexibility. Very, very important tools that we did not always have in the past.
Right, right. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I realized I hadn't said that in a few minutes. So 610-758-8810. You could call in and we can take your questions live on air, or you can give your question to Judy Ann and she will bring it into the studio for us. So let's move on to the resting stage. So the resting stage I call the retirement stage. You know, all of a sudden, yay, we're not working as much. Maybe we're not going to accumulate the way we were in our prior years. Sometimes people continue to accumulate because maybe they saved so much they're never going to spend it all. So in the retirement phase, the resting phase, it's in retirement, we tend to have more healthcare issues. And sometimes, again, we want to make sure our beneficiary designations are taken care of on our retirement accounts. We want our primary beneficiary designations, contingent beneficiary designations. In this phase of estate planning, Judy, what do those conversations look like when folks are coming in, they're in for their five-year review, they've notified you, yes, we're retired, yeah, we're having to pay for our own medical, we're having these health issues. What kind of conversations do we have as far as estate planning goes at this phase?
In addition, Laurie, to the normal reviewing what's changed in the client's lives since I saw them last, as you said, retired, maybe not the salary coming in, they're drawing from retirement plans, they have more time on their hands to enjoy travel, time with grandchildren. And just today I was reminded of something when I met with some clients. We also have the whole jurisdictional issue. The law, the world has become much smaller. And I can't tell you how many times I've met with new clients who never lived in Pennsylvania while they were employed, but they moved here to live a block away from their children so they could spend time with grandchildren. Or the reverse, met with clients yesterday who said, we think we're here for about 10 years once we're retired, and then we'll probably move to the West Coast to be with two of our three children and their grandchildren. So we have to take some, we want to be flexible in our planning as well, understand what the client's needs are, make sure that they have basic documents, that they'll be well served wherever they are, if they have a medical emergency, or something even worse than that, an illness or what have you, just some basic documents and a game plan for the future.
Okay. Folks, we're coming up on our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. When we come back, I want to ask Judy some more questions about what she just said. So we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. The time now is 6:46. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. I have in the studio with me this evening Attorney Judy Harris. We are talking about estate planning for every stage of your financial life. We have lots of questions coming in off air. I love the listeners, but it's so funny. It's either everyone calls in and talks live or everyone calls in and talks off air. So these are some great questions we'll get to in just a second. I want to let Judy wrap up where she left off when we were talking about the resting stage and the importance of making sure that your documents are flexible enough to accommodate you in your retirement years when you may be moving, traveling, working your way around the country, visiting family members, making sure you have health directives, advanced directives, powers of attorney, things that will work with you should the need arise. If there's an illness, an accident, you know, you're out of the area and something comes up and you need someone to act on your behalf, making sure all those documents are in order. Judy, I want to mention something because I'll have people ask all the time. I had clients move to Illinois from New Jersey, and I've had people move and they say, you know, do I need to update my estate documents? And I typically say, once you get settled in where you're moving, you need to contact an attorney, because we don't know the laws in the other states. You need to contact an attorney and have them review the documents. Is that safe to say? I mean, I would say yes, you'll say yes. But also, do you ever find where there's a state where you might have a client who comes in with a document that was written in another state that actually would work out okay in Pennsylvania? I mean, do you see that from time to time? Or do typically people, if they change their domicile, usually have to update documents for that state?
Interesting question, Laurie. Let me preface this answer by saying some states have statutes that say, if the document you signed at the time you signed it was valid in the jurisdiction where you signed it, it will be given effect in another jurisdiction. Now, that's a blanket statement. And keep in mind, that half of estate planning is about carrying out your wishes at death to make sure that the proper people receive what you want and institutions, but the other half is tax planning. And, you know, Pennsylvania's power of attorney law is very different from New Jersey's or Florida's. And the death tax consequences are different. So even if we're fortunate enough, because once in a while I do see simple wills that can be effectively administered in Pennsylvania, even though they weren't perhaps written there, there are also twists and turns in the assets that the client owned. It's not a done deal. It's in my view, if you don't mind an analogy, it's the difference between an airplane and a helicopter. There are a lot more moving parts in a helicopter, and a helicopter can go in all directions. We really have to look at the whole situation. I can think of, off the top of my head, five estates right now where there are assets in at least three jurisdictions, some of which are real estate. So we've had to open estates, raise estates, and however small, in additional states.
Well, there you go. As my tagline at the end of the show is always, be proactive, not reactive. And folks, it's so much easier for folks, if for your loved ones who are left at a time when they're very sad, they're trying to cope, they're stressed out, if you try to kind of, you know, button this up, cross your T's and dot your I's and take care of these things, because when you're working with an attorney, they can help that process and make it much, much simpler, and let your loved ones take care of the things they need to take care of. We did have a couple of calls come in off air. Someone called and they asked if we could talk about two things, revocable living trust and payable on death accounts. So that could also be a couple hours of talking, but in a nutshell, we could probably guess what they're maybe getting at. I would think a lot of times people will say, oh, do I need a living trust? People are always telling my mother she needs one. God bless my mother. She owns a house. That's it. And so a little tidbit on revocable living trust and maybe payable on death accounts, and then hopefully we'll still have time to answer Nancy's question from Allentown.
Okay. So. A word on revocable living trusts. I prepare a lot of them for clients. They can serve a nice function in addition to what I call a pour-over will. So instead of having a will, a single will be the cornerstone, if you will, of your estate plan, you'll have a brief will, a pour-over will that directs any assets that you don't already put in the trust during your lifetime. The will direct the residue of your estate into the trust, if you like. You should know that a revocable trust will not save you it will not minimize taxes in a way that a will won't. So I can achieve the same basic tax minimization strategies, you know, within the bounds of the law. I can do that with a revocable living trust as I can with a will. There's nothing magical, but you're creating a bit of a container that you control. You can be your own trustee as long as you're willing and able. And there's some benefits. We might be able to minimize some probate fees locally at the county level. I never want to imply that probate fees are the be-all and end-all. They're not evil. They're not awful. When you look at tax rates, you know, what we end up paying in tax in estates is far greater than probate fees. But there's some benefits to revocable living trusts, and it's on a case-by-case basis. I can evaluate that for the client.
And with all the estate planning documents that typically go in order, you can also capture some of the management provisions that some people think they can get through the living trust. You can also help them get that with the power of attorney.
Absolutely.
So lots of opportunities there. Payable on death accounts?
Payable on death accounts. That's a feature that that many banks and brokerage houses will allow you to use effectively turn what used to be an asset that could pass only through your will or to a joint owner at death. They allow you kind of to add a beneficiary designation, so the asset will pass directly to that named person at your death rather than have it go through the will. Do I like them? Are they good? Well, sometimes they serve purposes, but I to be honest with you, when I don't know that a client has made such a designation and I've done the client's estate planning and then this POD, payable on death designation, is made down the road without my knowledge, these are the things that make Judy go gray. And because I need to know about them. If for no other reason, you know, estates have to pay death tax. And if you give the bulk of your estate to a family member through a POD account, what do we do about, where does the money come from the estate to pay the death tax if it's all gone directly to a child? We shouldn't plan with blinders. It might seem like a really efficient thing to add a POD designation, but we have to look at the whole picture.
Right, because there's also other bills to pay, too, besides just the estate tax or the inheritance tax. Sometimes there's funerals to be paid and utility bills, and who's going to pay those? And let's have everybody scramble to figure out who's going to do that. That's always my issue with them as well. You know, sometimes people like to get clever and think they're helping, and sometimes it comes back a little bit. So it's all the big picture. So we had a question from Nancy in Allentown. She said, if a sibling has no money and no assets except a pension and Social Security, if I were to be a power of attorney or executor, what would I be obligated with financially? So basically, I think Nancy's concern is if she has a sibling who, you know, probably needs someone to serve as a power of attorney if something were to happen to them, or maybe an executor, and Nancy might be thinking this sibling might not have any assets, maybe there would be nothing to administer, but she may end up having debts, I'm thinking. Maybe she would have that funeral bill or something. And executors may be nervous, or folks might be nervous about agreeing to be an executor if they might be held financially responsible, I'm thinking is where that question's going. So would you like to touch on that, Judy?
Sure. Very briefly, Laurie. Let's cover the power of attorney situation first. If someone has given you power of attorney, the title you have is that which we call agent. You are agent for the principal. The principal is the person who created the power of attorney. You are what we call fiduciary. You are somebody who's being entrusted to do certain things for another person. And as long as you do your job according to law, you follow the rules of law, you act as a prudent person would act in similar situations, and this is where an attorney can be very helpful in guiding you. You should not be held personally liable if you followed the law in acting as agent in the power of attorney situation, okay? The executor situation can be even more complex because from time to time I'm faced with handling an estate. Perhaps I didn't prepare the will, I didn't know the person, but it might be a relative of some client. And there's an insolvent estate. There are more debts and expenses than there are assets. And I know many times the person appointed executor, the first inclination is to pay the bills as they come in. In fact, in an insolvent estate situation, the law is very clear what the executor's duties are. This is where an attorney, once again, can be quite helpful in categorizing the expenses and the debts, because there is a priority order. We classify the different expenses and debts, and the first priority class gets paid off. If there's still money left over, we then look to the second category. If there isn't enough money for the entire second category, you know, each creditor might get so many cents on the dollar. Once again, an executor is a fiduciary. You're being asked to be the business manager for one's estate. It's a very doable job. The law is pretty clear. And working with an attorney, you should be able to carry out your duties according to law. And if you do that, you should not be held personally liable.
So if a sibling, you know, needs your help and asks you to serve in this capacity, in this case, without knowing any of her circumstances, if she otherwise would be comfortable doing it, there would be other kind of protections for her.
Absolutely.
In the law. Okay. Judy, we're basically out of time. So our last section would have been the divesting section, which we kind of touched through all these other stages, because the beauty of doing estate planning for every stage of your financial life is each stage can apply at any stage. Each planning opportunity can apply at any stage. Just because you didn't do something when you were young doesn't mean you can't do it now. And just because you're doing gifting now as an older person doesn't mean you might not have been able to do that when you were younger in the other stages as well. Judy, if folks want to reach you, how do they reach you?
They are absolutely welcome to call me at Norris McLaughlin and Marcus. Formerly known in the not so olden days, we were known by our old firm name, Tallman Hutters and Sorrentino, or Butts Hutters and Tallman. Our phone number is 610-391-1800.
610-391-1800. It's been a pleasure, Judy. Thank you for doing this with me. We'll have to do it again. We have estate planning week coming up in October. Maybe we could bring you back for that. We're both members of the Estate Planning Council. We like to pitch them as well, because our community of professionals here in the Lehigh Valley are awesome, and everyone is working for the good of those that we serve here. So thank you, Judy, for coming. Next week, I will have as my guest Tim Roof, CFP from Valley National Financial Advisors, to discuss investing at every stage of your financial life. I'm having a lot of fun with this. Hope you guys are too. Thank you, listeners, so much. Great questions. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, Jeff. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.